ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 56. The crew today, Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Alas, the end of the basketball season. NCAA, NIT, and WNIT hopes, dreams, and reality. I know ACC teams in the NCAA Women's Championship. Georgia Tech men and women go home after quality postseason runs in the NIT and WNIT. Now it's up to one team to salvage the reputation of the ACC as the basketball conference in the NCAA Men's Championship. We'll talk about that. Some quick notes first from around the ACC. Virginia, the top-ranked rowing team in the CRCA Top 20 Rowing. Notre Dame, a number one in men's lacrosse, got bumped off by number three Syracuse over the weekend. That was a great game. I got an opportunity to watch that. New poll coming up this week. Louisville was sitting pretty in the NCBWA top 30 baseball rankings, but hit a little bump in the road in a recent series. Will that impact their position? Most likely. Florida State was atop the NFCA top 25 in softball. Will they hold on to that in the new poll? Is North Carolina still leading the ACC women's lacrosse contingent in the IWLCA top 20? You'll find out at accnation.net this week. Clemson has opted to add softball in lieu of women's diving. And in the ITA Collegiate Tennis Rankings, North Carolina and Wake Forest lead the ACC teams. They have the number one teams, both of those. They may have the number one doubles on both of those teams in the nation. And they have the number two on both teams. Singles performers, not bad. So let's get right into some basketball action here, guys, and let's talk a little bit about the NCAA Women's Championship first, and then we'll ease our way into the rest of the action. So let's talk about the lack of anybody being in there, and the fact that it's the SEC that appears to be the dominant force in women's basketball, because two of their teams are in the championship. Will, you want to kick things off this week?
Sure. Hey, so maybe it's not the UConn Invitational after all.
Yeah.
That was an unbelievable game Friday night, the Final Four game between Mississippi State and UConn, where Mississippi State won a buzzer beater in a game that they controlled through a lot of it. They were up double digits early on and in the first half, and then UConn came back and kept it even throughout the game. And then there wasn't exactly the most well-played ending. There was a lot of sloppiness and a lot of turnovers, and the game went on to overtime, where they say Mississippi State hit a buzzer beater to win the game and advance to the championship game. I watched basically the second half and on to overtime of that game, and that was a very captivating basketball game. So a lot of heart and passion in that game, just because there was so much at stake with a 111 game winning streak being snapped by Mississippi State and it was it was just a great ball game. And South Carolina, they're onto the championship game as well. And I guess if you want to look for an ACC angle, you got one right here. Dawn Staley, legendary Virginia women's basketball player, coach of South Carolina. There's your ACC angle. I think there'll be.
So basically, even though you're not saying this directly, Dawn Staley wouldn't be there and South Carolina wouldn't be there if it wasn't for her ACC roots. So let's just be,
Yeah, let's just be real here.
That's right. Oh, my. Well, that could get us into some real trouble.
Reality would get a lot of people in trouble, Jim.
This is true. And speaking of getting into trouble, Mr. Bond, how about you taking the reins and see what kind of deep stuff you can get us into?
As I take a deep draw from this kumquat fruit ale from Tampa Bay Brewing Company.
Wait a minute. Kumquat? Really?
Kumquat. Indeed. You're hearing that right.
Boy, oh boy. Okay.
Hey,
I
don't
put
skeptical.
Anything in beers nowadays. Yeah,
this is true. That's what worries. That worries me with a few brewers in particular. But anyway, Chris, go ahead.
Well, one of these is it might add water, so be careful.
I had one of those this weekend.
We can tell. But we weren't going to say anything. But you brought it up. Well, in any case, yeah, it is a kumquat fruit ale from Tampa Bay Brewing Company, 6.7 APV. As the weather gets warmer here, the fruit ales are starting to come out more. Something nice to sit on the front porch with and draw, or if you're recording a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But as I take a deep draw on that.
As long as it tastes good, that's the only thing that really matters, you know?
Well, you know what? Here's a thing. Morgan Williams will be a name that will be in a trivia answer for a long time. Who was the shot that ended the 111-game winning streak? And that's certainly a name to note, and she'll have many stories to tell generations in her family and going on in the years to come.
Yes.
Because that is and it's the only way to end a streak like that. It's the only way to end it is a shot at the buzzer.
Yeah.
And it was only appropriate for that to happen. Mississippi State had, I'll confess it myself. I told my someone important to me that night, "Do you want to watch the game?" And I responded, "Yeah, I know what's going to happen here, so we'll just wait and watch the title game on that." And boy, was that a mistake! And certainly was a reminder that this is why we love what we do here, guys. Because Mississippi State, the Lady Bulldogs, reminded us of why we love sports, because anything is possible on any given night. And this, I certainly went back through the highlights, and I certainly doesn't do it justice not seeing it live, but you can still just see the history and repeating that over and over again on your screen there that's happening. I like South Carolina winning this. They won the meetings this year with Mississippi State, but Mississippi State just took down Goliath.
One of the things that struck me about that shot, and I saw it, things slowed down for me, and every time I'm watching something and stuff starts slowing down, I realize in the moment, that's it. That's the play right there. And I watch that ball and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is it. And boom, and it hit. And I watch the faces of the UConn players. And
yeah.
To say that mm-hmm. was shock is probably an understatement. Mm-hmm. But, you know, It's going to come. It's going to come at any given moment, as you guys both point out.
A quick note of history to remind mm-hmm. ourselves. This moment reminded me, and Jim and I are old enough to remember, the 1980 hockey team, USA hockey team, that beat the Russians. People forget or don't know that was actually a semifinal. Mm-hmm. They had to beat Sweden in the final to actually win the gold medal, and they fell behind in that game, by the way, and came back and won it. This, again, was a semifinal. This can go one of two ways. It can be either the confidence carries him through like a runaway train downhill, no brakes, right through South Carolina, or overconfidence can get the best of them and they can fall flat.
I like Gino Auriemma's reaction at the end of the game when that shot went in. He just kind of like this kind of smile on his face is like, it happened. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, he didn't like look upset, too upset about it.
He knew it was coming.
Well, you know, a streak like that can be a burden.
Yeah.
It can be a weight. And every game you're getting everybody's best stones thrown at you, pun intended. And at some point it becomes a super heavy to carry. And when it can almost be like a relief when it's over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that. And I think that just reflecting on any time I've ever coached, if I've lost to a team that I've, in similar scenarios, I knew that it was coming eventually, and it just depends on how your team performs. And if they put forth their best effort and it just wasn't enough on that particular night or, you know, whenever, then that's the only thing you can ask of your players. So anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on to some other stuff. Georgia Tech men and the women. Nice postseason run. Let's talk about the men first. And it was a little bit of it's talking about brick walls again. They ran into a wall in their postseason game in the NIT. So, Chris, we'll stick with you and talk a little bit about Georgia Tech and their efforts in the NIT.
Boy, you talk about running into a wall.
Yes, they did.
Well, Jamie Dixon didn't forget how to be an ACC team. He certainly was. His Horned Frogs were certainly prepared that night. And, you know, Pastor certainly had the right game plan in play, but I think he was just and not sometimes this is said in a way that's damn, I don't want to be damaging in this because it's not. Pastner was just a little bit outcoached by a coach by with a little more experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shame in that in this situation. He had a good game plan out there, and his players certainly tried to deliver and follow through on it. It's just that Dixon had a little bit better one. There's a lot of ball moving on the TCU offense, and they stayed active and never let Georgia Tech send defenders ever really get set. And Georgia Tech has runs has a lot of in basketball. Your offense can flow from your defense, and Pastner coaches his players that way. And TCU just didn't make just got the right rebounds. They got the right there, and then in transition they were just a little quicker. We can look at the statistics all we want on this, but this was about just a little bit better coaching on a given night. The effort was the same on both players, and Pastner, this loss doesn't even begin to erase. We see a program, and we'll get into women here in a bit, the same thing for them. This program's definitely going in the right direction after a long time. And I even questioned this hire a year ago, whether this guy was the right fit or not, or whether the program had settled because they couldn't afford it because of being hampered by paying other coaches. Three previous coaches are still being paid. This was a good hire, it appears. And I think Pastner is in the right place, and they're only going to get better. I think this tournament in the NIT run was a portent of things to come. So the loss looks bad in a moment, but never judge a program or a career in a moment. Judge it by a body of work. The body of work this season, especially down the stretch. Keep in mind, Georgia Tech, there's only two schools this year that didn't lose more than three games, that didn't lose more than two games in a row this year. That was Georgia Tech and Kentucky. So that's a pretty telling statistic of the stability that he's brought into that. And I see a lot more success, and people will forget this loss years to come, I believe.
I look at the bench, and I just thought, quite frankly, that TCU was going to outman Georgia Tech. I just think they have a little
bit
more.
There's those benches again. Yep.
Yeah, depth and experience. Again, that's the two key words we throw in there. What are your thoughts on this game, Will?
Well, it didn't start out very pretty. I know Georgia Tech was down 20-3, and usually when you're down 20-3, you know, and Georgia Tech has to pass in order to get – oh, sorry, wrong sport. but no – it was,
Paul Johnson probably had thoughts, so.
Yeah. But no, they got down early. They just couldn't, like, Georgia Tech just couldn't hit anything. They, like, everything was just clanking off, and everything TCU seemed to shoot went in. And then, like I said, Georgia Tech could just never recover. They were down 38-27 at halftime, but it got worse as the second half went on. I mean, TCU outscored them 50-29 in the second half. Ended up winning the game by 32, but it was, you know, it was like Chris said, it was an unbelievable season for Georgia Tech when you consider the expectations. They had a lot of struggles in this game. Ben Lambers was 1 of 11 from the field. Quentin Stevens in his final game was 2 of 8. Josh Okogie 4-12. There were not a lot of great shooting performances, at least among the starters. They turned the ball over 17 times. They were out-rebounded 44-30 by TCU. And we should give Jamie Dixon his props at TCU. He came in from basically being forced out of Pitt into a new situation where he got the Horned Frogs, you know, as the NIT champs. And they looked like a very good team, and, you know, props to them. But, you know, Georgia Tech, there's no shame. And the way the season ended, they greatly exceeded, like I said, everybody's expectations. You know, there was the one writer who said that Georgia Tech, you know, might be the worst Power 5 team he's ever seen. And they ended up winning 21 games, which shows you just what an amazing coaching job Josh Pastner did this year. And if you're looking forward, you're going to, you know, most likely, you know, the core of this team is going to be back. I don't know what Ben Lambert's intentions are right now, I tweeted this out the other night that I thought he might at least test the waters, maybe not high NBA waters, not hire an agent. I think ultimately be best for him to come back. And if he comes back with another year of Josh Okogie, you know, learning and everything, this team should be in the NCAA tournament next year.
Watch out, yeah. One thing to note here, among all the doubters, it was passed for himself. He was worried coming in they would even win a conference game.
Yeah. And you know what? Great turnaround. And the players bought in and they performed. I'm in agreement with Will on Lammers. Stay another year. I think it's going to be for your benefit. Give you an opportunity. Buff up, you know, buff up, get your game down. And then after that, you know, test the waters. But I don't think testing the waters right now is going to do anything more than put you into, you know, some really shallow water with an awful lot of alligators. And that's not a good place to be when you go to the NBA, because you get shipped off someplace where you don't get an opportunity. Really, it falls on you as an NBA player when you come in to develop. You either develop or you don't, because, you know, coaches don't have time to spend working on you and it bringing you along. You either have to do it or you don't.
They're professionals. They're not in the development anymore. Yeah. They're in putting the pieces together.
Now, you'll see that in the NFL, which is a whole different ball game altogether. No pun intended there.
Quarterbacks especially.
You have to bring people along. That's just the reality, because there's such a difference between the two games. But, Lammers ought to stick around for another year. And, Will, as you noted, put Lammers and Okogie together again. Man, you've got something really rolling there, that's for sure. Let's go on to the women, Will. Let's talk about how they – oh, man, they almost had this. And it was just like – after that second overtime, I could see where it was going, and I didn't like it, and I really felt bad at that moment. But, you know, let's talk about that game.
It was a very even game throughout. I mean, Georgia Tech ended up losing in triple overtime, 89-79, to Michigan, and a game being played in Detroit because Michigan's arena was being used for another event. But this game was back and forth. Like, say, if you look at the quarter splits, no quarter was decided by more than a point, not counting the third overtime. They're just talking about the regulation. This was a good back and forth game. I mean, Georgia Tech had, you know, plenty of opportunities to win this in regulation. They just couldn't do it. Michigan the same way. They, especially when you got into the overtimes, they had a couple chances to pull away, but then Georgia Tech came right back and tied it. Neither team shot very well. I mean, Georgia Tech shot 39% from the field. Michigan shot 36%. Neither team, they shot worse from three. Georgia Tech shot 30% from three. Michigan shot 27%. You know, the big stat to me in this game is turnovers. Georgia Tech turned the ball over 24 times. Michigan just 11. That really is your big difference. Because Georgia Tech, you know, if they even turn it over 20 times, even you could say they could win that game, because they held a 56-38 rebound advantage. It was they were very good all throughout. One of the unfortunate thing is O'Neal had 21 points and 9 rebounds, but she fouled out late in regulation. She was having, you know, a great game. For the Yellow Jackets, unfortunately, she turned the ball over 7 times. But aside from that, 21-9, and she had, you know, she was playing very well up until that point. Etta Farioka had 11 points, 17 rebounds. You know, she had 8 offensive rebounds, 5 blocks, defensive force for the Yellow Jackets herself. Those two right there were a lot of the reason that Georgia Tech had a chance in this game. But like Jim said, you know, as soon as it got to that third overtime, you could just kind of feel like we knew where this was going, and Michigan kind of, you know, started to pull away, hit a couple shots early in that third overtime, and just felt like that ended up being the dagger right there. And, you know, nothing to be ashamed about. This Georgia Tech team played, you know, excellent. You know, they got hot at the right time in the WNIT. I mean, they obviously struggled during the regular season. But, you know, like I say, sometimes, you know, a young team like this who's got a lot of key players, you know, who will be back next year. This is nothing more than a great learning experience going into next year. I think you can expect some good things from the Yellow Jackets next season.
Can't go wrong. I thought both of those teams looked a little bit gassed after the first half. And that wouldn't surprise me considering the schedule that they have to maintain in a tournament of this nature. Here's the one thing that, and I'll get your input, both you and Chris, on this. I think, and the WNIT is run by a separate organization, but I think that they should seriously consider having the semifinals and the championship in neutral locations. I understand why on a financial basis they do it this way, and they have to, I guess, build toward maybe going in that direction. Maybe that's their goal long term, but it would certainly, to me, present a better picture to have it in a neutral location than to continue really having it on home turf throughout the tournament. Any reflections on that, Will?
I understand what you're thinking. I just wonder, like, could you find a neutral, you know, a good neutral site that would be willing to host this? I mean, the attendance there yesterday was amazing. I think that building sold out for that game. So obviously, you know, it was a great, well attended game. But, you know, I understand what you're thinking. I just don't know who would be the perfect spot. Perfect arena to host something like that.
Mm-hmm. Chris,
kind of putting me on the spot there.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, it's off the top of your head thought there. Chris, what are your thoughts on that topic?
I really would like that. Now, here's the advantage that the men's tournament, the women's NIT doesn't have. The men's NIT is actually the oldest tournament that's active out there. It's older than the NCAA. So they have an established history of meeting in New York for decades. The idea of getting them to meet at a neutral site for the sake of being a neutral site is the reason I support that, Jim. It's just finding an arena where or a place where that would support it, because you want to some cachet is needed to be built up for this tournament. Just to iterate there, my roots are in Michigan. I can tell you, Michigan fans do support their sports across the board up there. They're not just big football fans. They support all their sports and with good attendance. They're big, big sports fans across right down, up and down their athletic department. So it's not shocking to me that that was almost a sold out there in Detroit.
I guess the question, Chris, would be, do you think that they'd have the same attendance at Georgia Tech if it had been played there?
I would venture to say yes, but I would venture to say yes on that. Georgia Tech fans, we guys, we know that the Georgia Tech are basketball fans, and while we're, as I said earlier in the podcast, we're so glad this program, both the men's and the women's, are finding success now. Because that's a hungry group that's been wanting to see, because they're, especially in the men's side, they were so used to having success all during the Bobby Cremins era, which now seems so long ago. But a lot of the Yellow Jacket fans have long memories, kind of like Miami football fans. They don't forget those great years, and they want them back. I think with that spirit in mind, I think if the game was played in Atlanta, you would have gotten similar support there. The question being a neutral site, going to a neutral site, Jim, is would be good for the sport itself as far as the competition on equal footing. It's just a matter of when and where do you get it done.
True. How about reflecting on that game? Any thoughts on that 3-0 final?
Well, you have to give credit where it's due. Caitlin Flaherty from Michigan, you know, 27 points in that game. The critical part was where I really thought the Lady Jackets were on the verge of clinching it out. So they were up by six, and Flaherty hit two big three-pointers, and these were deep ones that she hit. You sometimes see these games where one team may be playing a little better overall, but there's a key player on the other side that just isn't going to let their team die. And I have a great admiration for moments like that and players like that. And Flaherty, giving credit where it's due for the Michigan Wolverines, certainly had that moment there Friday. And, you know, so close. As Will was talking about, O'Neal had a great game but fouled out with 3.36 left here, as I'm reading. And if Roika had a double-double, just a machine on the glass of 17 rebounds. This was a rebounders game for sure. The shooting, as Will said, wasn't that great. But, you know, the games like this is where rebounders have their moment. But the big shots by Flaherty were just too much to overcome there. And triple overtime in a title game, which is, by the way, this is the first overtime in a title game for the WNIT. But, you know, it's almost like everybody deserves a medal after that.
Do it big or go home. And I'll tell you what, they did it big. That was a fun game to watch. Those three overtimes, man. Congratulations to both teams. They just played an awesome game. And Georgia Tech, men and women, they have certainly, both of those programs have certainly done themselves a lot of good with these postseason appearances. So let's move on. As I said at the beginning of the program, salvaging the reputation of the ACC as the basketball conference, there's one team left in the NCAA Men's Championship, and that is North Carolina. Chris, let's talk about North Carolina, their performance, and we'll get into who they're facing next, because I think this is going to be one heck of a challenge in the championship.
My goodness, where would they be without Kennedy Meeks? Especially that last rebound that he pulled away from Jordan Bell in the end there. The shooting in this game was atrocious. I say that with a little bit of candor, but it's meant to be that way. The shooting was just not great, and I'm sure Will go through the numbers here with us in a few moments here. But it came down to, the Tar Heels, he was the only one who could shoot straight. Now, when he muscled away that game-saving offensive rebound, ice cold was everybody else there. Four straight free throws. I mean, when Joe Berry missed that last one, you saw as the ball was in the air, if Oregon gets this ball, they're going to win this. That's the feeling that I had there. And maybe that's exactly what Meeks was feeling when he reached for it and fought for that rebound. Because this team has been on a mission since that loss to Villanova last year in the final. And everything they worked hard for came down to that moment. And in a great season and a great title run, you'll have some teams will have different players step up in different moments. And Neek certainly made it happen in this moment. And they're going to need that and more, because you know you got Gonzaga coming up here tomorrow night. I mean, you got Karnowski and Collins, both a pair of 7-footers, dominating that paint for Gonzaga, who again. They saved their bacon against South Carolina that gave them everything they could and then some. But as we said the other day, I thought Oregon was a great team. They had good to great shooting every part of the floor. They had an excellent rebounding team. I thought Carolina had a little more rebounding overall from their bench, and it came down to that one extra rebound at the end that saved the day. I think this is going to be a monstrous game Monday night. Gonzaga is a team that wasn't that long ago was the Cinderella everybody was pulling for. And they kept getting to Elite Eight after Elite Eight and not getting past it. Well, here they are, number one seed. We've been waiting for them to arrive on the national scale. Well, this is their moment, and the sentiment will be they're taking on one of the old guard, the established programs. So there will be, by and large, majority of America, I certainly will believe, we'd be pulling for Gonzaga. But putting the sentiments aside, this is what you want. This is the up-and-coming, challenging heavyweight ready to take on the old champion wanting to reclaim his title. So this is a you don't dare write it any better in my mind. So it's going to be a pretty thing to see.
I saw North Carolina play a team game. Now, I didn't see quite the same effort on the part of Gonzaga. I saw a couple of people really standing out and a lot of energy expended. And as I said earlier when we were talking about the women, there's a lot of juice that's been expended in this tournament. And by the time you get to the very end, you are physically and emotionally drained, and you have to dig deep to find just what you need to win this championship. Several episodes ago, I said North Carolina is that championship team. I think they've got it written all over them. It's going to take a team effort, I think, to beat Gonzaga. We shall see. We'll reflect on this Oregon game and then get into a little bit of what the Bulldogs bring to the game.
Yeah, like Chris said, you know, Kennedy Meeks, the game of his life, 25 points, 14 rebounds, 8 of them offensively, and none more are critical than the one at the end of the game that helped, you know, seal it for the Tar Heels. He was 11 of 13 from the field, so he played unbelievably, and Carolina's not winning that game without him, that's for sure. Isaiah Hicks and Theo Pinson combined to go 3 of 20. That was a little rough. I mean, Justin Jackson had a pretty solid game with 22 points, but he turned it over 4 times. Joel Berry also hit a really bad game, 2 of 14 shooting. So Tar Heels struggled a lot to shoot, but without Kennedy Meeks and Justin Jackson, they're probably not winning this game. But you know, the one thing that you have to do to beat Carolina is be with them in the rebounding, and Oregon was. The rebounds were even at 43 apiece. I felt bad for the kid Jordan Bell for Oregon when he tweeted out something to the apologizing for not boxing out on the final play. But you know, the kid had 13 points, 16 rebounds, and 4 block shots. So he was hardly the reason they lost. I mean, he could look at his teammates like Dylan Brooks, who was 2 of 11 and fouled out. And Tyler Dorsey was 3 of 11. So his team didn't shoot. Oregon didn't shoot any better. So it's not like it was all on him. But
it's a team effort. It always is.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And I mean, going back to Carolina for a second, you know, they had a pretty, you know, good ball game in terms of handling. I mean, they turned it over 11 times, but you know, compared to Oregon 16, they handled the ball a lot better. As far as the matchup with Gonzaga, this is going to be a very intriguing one, because you got, you know, the bigs of North Carolina against, you know, Karnowski and Collins of Gonzaga. That's going to be a good matchup to go along, you know, when they go up against, you know, the forwards like Meeks and Hicks and Pinson. And we'll be interested to see what kind of run Tony Bradley gets in this game, because I think they're going to need a lot of their bigs to stand up in this game. Obviously, we know what Gonzaga's guards can do. If you saw during the game against South Carolina with Nigel Williams-Goss, you know, doing really well, he's gonna be a big factor in this game. You know, Carolina, obviously, if they're gonna win, they need Joel Berry to shoot better than 2 of 14 from the field. And I know some of that, you know, some of that might be injury related, but you know, he's gonna have, you know, almost 48 hours to recoup. So hopefully that will help him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I want to see Carolina win, not just because I want to see the ACC win the national title, but also because I want to win money in my bracket pool of work.
Yeah.
No personal incentive there, is there?
No.
Self-serving. Yeah. Call foul. Yeah.
You just need to admit it's Sammy's bracket, so we know.
No, this is funny. Let me go off tangent for a second. You know, my wife and I do a pool. We've done this for a couple of years now. We do a bracket. The winner, what we do decide to win is, you know, whoever has the most Final Four teams in. The loser has to wash dishes for an entire month. She's watched maybe 5 minutes of college basketball this year and beat me.
I can
that's how it works. That's how it goes.
I can give you a little insight here. The former host of this program years ago, somewhat similar situation. And she used to just rake him over the coals. Mm-hmm. In the brackets every year, and it was like, how is this happening? You know, it's because I think sometimes we get too close to the game.
We overanalyze.
Yes,
we're overanalyzing it.
We do. And I think that's part of it.
It's so much better just to pick a team for their color jerseys. Or
she beat me 2-0 in this year, and the two teams that made it for her were Gonzaga, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, props to my wife for that. But
she copied Jim's bracket.
Exactly.
must have had insider information.
Yes, and I was going to bring that up at some point too, Chris. Thank you for doing it. So anyway.
Yeah, well, we need to inflate your overinflated ego already.
So. Yeah, that's right. Just blow a little more hot air where along with the rest of the hot air. Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, this promises to be a great game. I think based upon everything my gut is telling me, this game is going to be won not so much by that incredible battle underneath. I think it's going to be won by who's shooting best from the arc. Now, Mr. Statman, if you compare the two teams, what do you think?
Yes. You got, you know, a team in Gonzaga who's number one in defensive efficiency on KenPom, and you know, got North Carolina who's number seven in offensive efficiency. So you're going to see, you know, offense versus defense, and you know, it depends on, you know, who wins out in terms of that. The tempos are pretty similar. I mean, they're about a possession a game difference. So you could expect this game to be north of 70 possessions. You could see both teams getting, you know, some. I think really it's going to be a pretty even matchup when you break it down. I mean, there are a lot of people who obviously are kind of want to see Gonzaga win because they want to see this team from the West Coast Conference that nobody really like thinks of, you know, because they're not from the big, you know, the big five schools or whatever. But you see, other people want to see Carolina win for that same reason. You know, we obviously want to see Carolina win because, you know, they're the ACC, and we want to see ACC teams succeed and feel like they're kind of owed one after the way last season ended, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm all for Carolina because I think that they've earned it. I think they've worked toward it. And again, ACC school, yeah. So we'll see what happens. I just think this is going to be a real battle, and it's going to be a fun game to watch. I would hate to be a fan of either one of these teams because, you know, you might want to go and have your doctor check you out and see if your heart is in good condition, because I think you're going to be really pushed to the brink on this game.
Including, again, a former host of this program.
true. I suggested to his wife that she hook up a TV out on the deck to keep things quiet in the house. And surprisingly enough, she indicated that he was quiet, which was pretty unusual. I'm sure that he was about to blow his top over that game, though. So, anyway, congratulations to North Carolina and to Gonzaga both. It's going to be a great game. You've earned your way there. Guys, let's move on from basketball because, as I said, the basketball season is just about over, and we are looking at baseball. We've got spring football, and a lot of other things that are going on around us. And so let's sort of redirect ourselves here. Let's talk a little bit about spring football. And Will, I'll stick with you here. And anything in particular that's standing out? Because, you know, we can't go down every single school and talk about you know,
I mean,
how they're doing. But
there's a lot of teams haven't even had their spring games yet. So I think some of them are just getting started. I know North Carolina just had, or NC State, I believe, just had their spring game yesterday.
Yep.
They had, I know the kicking game went well. I know their kicker Bambard hit a couple really nice field goals from deep, so they know the kicking game is going to be there again this year. I think the question right now is, you know, they need some production on offense. I know they lost a couple big players coming in, you know, after the season to graduation. Dave Doran's got a little bit of a hot seat, I would imagine, after struggling last year and barely making a bowl, and for all we know, he could have been fired had they lost to UNC at the last game of the season. But you know, there's another year for redemption. But this, I think they're gonna. It's gonna be an interesting year with them, especially just because you know, they have there's so much, so many question marks, especially offensively, that they you know they need some production there. Because I mean, their defense will be fine, I think, but I just think their offense could be a little bit of a question mark.
If you want to check out some of the spring football highlights, and we'll try to get as many up as possible as they're available. Not all schools are really good about getting video out, sometimes never, and for good reason. They don't want everybody taking a look at their tape. But we do have a number of spring football highlights that are posted at accnation.net and some very interesting conversation. And you can kind of judge a little bit by watching the coaches in their interviews, some of the things they're saying. One of the things that stood out to me, Pat Narduzzi, who just really seemed kind of cool and calm, which doesn't normally strike me that way. And I wasn't sure what to think of that. Chris, your thoughts on some of the spring football action going on in the ACC?
Well, I want to talk about, there's three teams I think out there need a good spring. Louisville, Clemson, and Pittsburgh, as you just bring up Narduzzi there, and I'll get to him in a moment. You know, forget for a moment with Louisville that the three-game losing streak to close the season, you know, Louisville finished 3 yards short of winning the ACC title, and that is why the Cards need a big spring. Without a doubt, they need to clean up the errors that plagued the end of the season. Yeah, starting the offensive line, but let's remember, this is a team that returns a Heisman Trophy winner, Lamar Jackson, that dazzled Florida State and nearly single-handedly beat Clemson, too. This is a team that returns Jalen Smith and, you know, Trayvon Samuel, Seth Dawkins. This is a team that could have a monster secondary. With the damage they took on that losing streak at the end of last year, they need to show in this spring to polish those things up and rediscover that confidence that they had that they had that midseason. The next team is Clemson. You know, and of course, yeah, we're coming off a national title, and there's not much that could happen this spring that would dim the enthusiasm for sure. But next few weeks, I think, are actually critical for the Tigers to win another ACC title. You know, Dabo Swinney noted, I was watching there, all but a handful of freshmen are already on campus, meaning the team he'll watch the spring looks an awful lot like the one he'll have in the fall. So there isn't a time to work out growing pains. It's a time to identify who would be the top on the depth chart and where the biggest need to remain. But, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, back-to-back 8-5 seasons for Narduzzi. You have a feeling they're in good hands, but that secondary is just awful for them. And that is something you want to see how they're going to develop. And I'm going to want to really get a gander on that spring game most of all. I want to see how they react. Yes, they're going to have a new quarterback to replace Peterman. But I want to see how they're coached to their coverages. I want to see where they are in guarding your man and how they are in the cover one and cover two zones. They had so much trouble. They weren't confusing other teams. They were confusing themselves back there. And that's certainly three teams I want to keep an eye on this spring.
Yeah, we'll try to pull up some tape from other sources and get them into your hands so that you guys can take a look and get a better feel as the season goes on. There's a lot of early season stuff that I think, as I said before, most teams – they will put out stuff that's sort of, you know, give you a little inkling of what's going on, but for the most part, they're not going to give you a really good picture to take a look at. They don't want to give away what they do or do not have and what their strengths and weaknesses are, at least not at this point in the season. As the season goes on, we'll see it, obviously, on the field. Let's talk about baseball, guys. Chris, we'll stick with you and your thoughts on ACC baseball.
Well, really, I just wanted to there's a lot of things we can talk about. There's a lot of them full swing, but team I wanted to look at here, I wanted to focus on just a little bit, was Virginia Tech. They took an early 3-1 lead against Boston College yesterday, and they have won that, and they've won now 2 ACC series. They didn't win a single ACC series last year. They've won now 2, and they took 2 out of 3 from Florida State last week, and now They're about to sweep Boston College, who, by the way, is having a very disappointing season so far, 1-10 in conference, and certainly not the way Mike Gambino was looking to head for things after their run in the tournament last year. Virginia Tech is right now, you look at the standings, you know, they're 16-13, 5-6, puts them right in the middle of the pack. They were the team at the bottom that was just taking the beating from everybody. Let's call it what it was last year. A light bulb may have come on in that program and starting to turn, and certainly somebody we want to keep an eye on going forward.
Will, your thoughts on ACC baseball?
Well, just to add on to something Chris said about Virginia Tech, I mean, they destroyed Boston College and won the Friday game 16-4, and put up 10 runs in the Saturday game. They're a much improved team this year. Boston College, I'm a little disappointed. I thought they would be better this year than they've been. I mean, they made the tournament last year, have gotten off to a 1-10 start in conference play this year. They're 8-16 overall. We thought with so much returning, they would have a better chance of making the tournament again this year. But they have struggled a lot, and we see why. Their pitching has not been very good. On the plus side, though, we're seeing Clemson and Louisville, pretty much the cream of the crop in the conference. North Carolina as well. All three teams are Clemson and Louisville tied for first in the conference in the Atlantic, and North Carolina already has a 3-game lead in the Coastal over pretty much everybody else in the Coastal. Virginia Tech are, you know, second and third. And then, you know, Virginia's had an up and down year. They're 21-7 overall, but 5-6 in conference play. And they're playing Louisville right now, and just had a pretty impressive game on Saturday where they had a lot of offense in their game. And Virginia lit them up on Saturday in an 11-2 win where they scored four runs in their fifth inning. Basically, all their runs came in the latter part of the game. You know, Pavin Smith for Virginia had a grand slam for the Cavs, who need a win because they've had a, like I say, they've had an up and down season. But Louisville's, you know, pitching yesterday was a little rough. I mean, Cade McClure gave up five runs in 4 1/3, and then their bullpen didn't help either. They gave up six more runs, didn't get many strikeouts either. Virginia's hitting was on pretty on yesterday, and like I say, there was an unbelievable performance by the Cavs. But you know, our favorite player, Seth Beer, continues to do it, man. He's having another great season. And
another round.
Yes, sir. I'll be interested to follow his story, you know, going forward, because just for name purposes.
No, sure. Right. Just
not
to keep,
at all.
Keep Chris entertained at least.
Yep.
I did want to
bring this up too, is Chris is probably following a little bit closer, but what's going on with Florida State?
Oh goodness. You talk about pitching woes. The weekend rotation just is not solidified like Martin hoped it would. They're just not scoring enough runs in the game, and you're losing a middle week game to Jacksonville University. And yeah, the 1-0 loss was people point to when things turned. It wasn't really to Florida, I should say, was where things people feel like things turned. I don't think that's what it was at. Losing a 1-0 game to a team that's been close to the final last two years is nothing to be ashamed of at all. But when you start letting teams bat around like Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech had two innings in that weekend series last week where they batted completely around in their order. And that is certainly never a good sign for your pitching. And I'm not sure even Mike Martin even knows what the problem is. So it's really hard to put the finger on, but there's something mentally going on the pitching staff where they're just not confident in their strike throwing, and that's permeating of course throughout the team's success. When your pitching starts having mental breakdowns, then you're going to see it in the record. Everybody suffers. We're going to keep an eye on this, all three of us, I'm sure, but especially myself, obviously. And we'll see. We'll get more on tabs of what's happening there in Tallahassee with the program.
So let me just say this: that never underestimate an opponent ever in any sport. That's a gimme. If you want to know more about the success of Virginia Tech, here's what I'm going to suggest you do. go to theacc.com. Take a look at baseball and stats, and take a look at the overall stats, not just the top five, but take a look at the overall stats and start looking very carefully at each grouping in there, and you'll start to see why Virginia Tech is having as much success as they are. And conversely, it'll start telling you a little bit of story about Florida State too. So, and it'll obviously give you the big picture of the entire ACC. Guys, any final thoughts from you, Chris?
Beer is good. No. the everlasting truth right there, I reiterated. Now, as we wind down basketball season here, we're getting into baseball. I just want to reflect on as the snow starts to melt in some places. Today is opening day in Major League Baseball. Spring and opening day in baseball, and it's just the feeling of renewness, of renewing and starting over, and everybody's hopes are fresh. And so, as it is, still is in the ACC baseball conference, we got a lot of great teams we're going to talk about more in a couple of weeks, guys. And I'm really intrigued to see the direction that Virginia Tech is going here, as I just talked a few minutes ago. Yeah, we know Louisville's been on a tear. We know Virginia is right there as well. But and North Carolina just having just smoking the competition out there. I want to keep an eye on these Hokies. They are not who we thought they were. And we're gonna study more in depth and talk about them more in coming weeks.
And final thoughts from Will.
For those of you who are in the college hockey, I'll be on the L Sports Discussion podcast with our friends Matthew and Jeff, talking a little college hockey here coming up. It'll be something you can listen to when you wake up in the morning, along with this podcast, obviously. So look for me on there.
All right. For Chris Kumquat Bond and Will Ogenen, I'm Jim Quist.
Skull.
Slodger.